Welcome to Trent Voices, the Trent University Alumni Affairs Show on Trent Radio. I'm your host, Donald Fraser of Alumni Affairs. It is Tuesday, March the 1st. And this is episode 31. My guest today just received her PhD in environmental and life sciences last June, which would lead you to believe that she's yet to really start her career, which might be the case in a lot of instances, but not if you were talking about Andressa Lacerda. Andressa is a CFO and full partner in Noble Incorporated, a company that will manufacture and distribute filtration systems to remove nanosilver from wastewater. Don't worry, we're going to explain what that means. As well as a pharmaceutical company that will eventually manufacture drugs which cure cancer and diseases caused by viruses. And she herself has made waves with her research, which links protein mutation and neurological disease. She's packed a whole lot into her 26 years. And while she's just getting started, has already put together an incredible beginning to her career that at this point, well, it has no ceiling. I'm really, really happy to welcome to the Trent Radio Studios and to Trent Voices, Andressa Lacerda. Welcome, Andressa.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Yes. So it's a snowy day here in Peterborough, and I'm talking to a woman who came to Trent University via her homeland of Brazil, and I gave you an out. I said, you know, it's storming. You don't have to show up if you don't want to, and she said, and I quote, "I like to live on the edge." So first of all, I commend you on that. I commend you, and I commend you on coming in. And second of all, does this mean that after 8 years in Canada that you're used to our winters?
No, that's not at all what it means. I still suffer when it comes to the winters for sure. But I learned to embrace it in a certain way. As long as I'm inside, it's perfect.
It's perfect. It's all about the tea and the blanket and whatever's on Netflix.
Exactly.
Now, before we talk about your work, and there's a ton to talk about here, I want to quickly ask you about, well, Brazil and Trent, and more specifically, what a young woman from Brazil was doing at a small university in central Ontario.
You know, I used to get asked that question all the time, and the story is I actually did a year of university in Brazil. I was studying diets and nutrition in São Paulo, the city that I am from.
Okay.
And one day I decided to go to this fair that goes on in Brazil in São Paulo about studying Canada. That was September. And I said, wow, I really like this. Good stuff. I want to move to Canada. December 28th of the same year, I landed in Canada. And I spent 7 months in Hamilton to practice my English and pass all the English proficiency tests. And then I started at Trent, and I haven't been able to leave since.
San Paulo's loss is our gain. So there you go. So when you started out at Trent, you're in Canada for, you know, all of a few months, and you did your undergrad here, which was a BSc in biology with a specialization in health sciences. At that point, did you have plans of sticking around for grad studies?
At that point, I thought that I would want to do my master's, and that's it. I was like, okay, master's, I'm done with Canada, I'm going back to Brazil.
That's that lousy winter.
Exactly. And yeah, I used to have to ride the bus back then too, so being outside waiting for the buses, I was like, this is no way of living. I'm suffering. But yeah, things changed.
and to heck with the masters, you decided, well, that's for suckers, and you jumped right ahead and you got your PhD instead. What caused that turn?
So that was an interesting point in my life. There was a lot of going on, getting to meet Adam Noble and learning a bit more of his research and the stuff going on with my own studies that was just getting way too interesting.
Yeah.
And I'm a very curious person, and I wanted to be able to participate as much as possible. So it was a tough decision, so I ended up transferring to... I never actually got my master's. I transferred to a PhD, and I survived. Let's put it that way.
Well, you didn't just survive. You flourished. And in fact, during your time doing your PhD, once you transferred from your master's degree and changed discipline slightly, your career A, started, and B, branched off in two different directions. So there's your primary academic work and then your work with Noble Inc. And we'll get to Noble Inc. in a mm-hmm. second. But first, your primary academic work that you based your PhD on, working alongside Trent biology professor, Craig Brunetti, and another student, Emily Harches?
Yes.
Is that how you pronounce her name? Sorry, Emily.
Yeah, they pronounced it just fine.
Oh, great. You helped discover the cellular mechanism that results in the Charcot-Marie-Tooth disease, which if I'm not wrong, and chances are I am, that it is the most common neurodegenerative disease found in humans. So before we get to the actual cellular mechanism that you were working on, let's start about CMT. What is the disease?
So Charcot-Marie-Tooth disease, even though it says tooth, has nothing to do with your teeth. That's the first thing you like to get out of the way.
Google it, folks.
Yeah. So it's an inherited neurological disorder. Mm-hmm. So what that means, it is passed on from generation to the generation, and also it affects your neuromuscular system. Okay. So people affected by that disease, they'll have atrophy or weakening of their lower limbs, so their legs, for example, mm-hmm. as well as their upper limbs, such as their hands and arms. And it could even lead to paralysis. So just like Alzheimer's mm-hmm. or Parkinson's, that is a progressive disease, is the same story with Charcot-Marie-Tooth disease or CMT. It is a progressive disorder. So you know that's happening and you know it's only going to get worse.
Yeah.
And also the bad part is that there is no current treatment mm-hmm. or cure for this disease. So that's one of the things that really triggered me to be interested about this, because it affects one in every 2,500 people, but people don't know much about it.
And so what you were doing then is, your research shed light on why the mutations of a particular protein led to CMT disease. First of all, tell us a bit about what that protein is, and we'll go from there, actually. Right,
perfect. So the long name for the protein, because scientists, they love giving it a long name and a short form and a different name
just to mess this up.
So the long name of the protein is lipopolysaccharide 2-aminosalicylate necrosis factor alpha, but we refer to it as LITAF.
I'm going to go with that one.
Yeah, right? Or LITAF.
LITAF. No, even better.
I know. The nicknames are really a savior there.
Yeah.
But that protein is actually present in everyone.
Okay.
So we have that protein. Some animals have that protein as well. Some bacteria have that protein. Mm-hmm. So it's not something that you spontaneously make a protein. That's why you have the mutation.
Okay.
What happens is that you have the protein in us, but something happens with your genetic library when you're being made.
Yeah.
And it kind of says, oops, instead of putting an A, I put a T where a protein would be. Because the way that biology works is you have your DNA. Your DNA is transferred to protein through an RNA. So it's DNA, RNA, protein. So if you have a mutation on your DNA, that would translate all the way to a mutation on the protein.
Mm-hmm.
And in case of the Charcot-Marie-Tooth disease, the mutation is a one-letter difference.
Wow.
In a specific spot that causes the disease.
Which I imagine is incredibly difficult to track. And here you are tracking these mutations. How does one go about doing that?
So in my case, I used microscopes.
Okay.
I was the microscope nerd at Trent. I knew how to use the microscope. I would spend hours and hours at end with the microscope, to the point that one day I left the microscope room and I had like the rims of the microscope under my eyes. And I was walking around, people just looking, and I was like, what? And then I looked at myself in the mirror. I was like, oh, that's why. Yeah, so what I would do is light up the protein. There is a way that you can trick the protein to actually be fluorescent. So when you look at it under the microscope, it actually lights up. And with that, you can track where the protein is inside of the cell. So the cell themselves, they're little organisms, and they have all the different components that make them function. So I like to compare them as little cars. So just like your car has an engine, it has a carburetor, and has the pedals, and have all of that, all of those parts have to be functioning properly in order for have a fully functional car.
Yeah.
And whenever you put, for example, the oil that you put on your brakes is different than the oil that you put in your engine.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with the proteins. The protein that goes in one spot in the cell is different than the proteins that go in the other spot. But if there's a mutation in one of those proteins, they might get lost and go to the wrong spot. And that's what I found, that the proteins were supposed to be going to point A, but instead they're going to a completely different spot, which is point B, causing the disease and causing the muscle to be weakened because of that.
And this is really cool research. And just, I mean, the process itself is noteworthy. But now that we've tracked this mutation, what are the next steps that are going to be taken with this knowledge?
So now, again, there was nothing really out there that suggested this. And now that you know where it is, it opened up a whole lot of doors of possibilities. So my professor and I still call him my professor. I'm the only one who calls him Dr. Brunetti. Like, we taught a class together, and I still call him Dr. Brunetti.
Well, but, fine. I'm going to call you Dr. Lacerda for the rest of this interview then.
I worked hard. No, just kidding.
Yeah. Here you go, Donald.
For that, just kidding. No, please call me Andreas.
Yes.
But with that, we actually filed a patent because we suggested a way to be able to potentially treat this disease, knowing that every protein, none of them actually work on themselves. They always have to interact with another protein to be able to do their job. And certain proteins, they interact better with other proteins. And that's what we did. We just found something that would interact well and say, okay, maybe this will work.
So at this point, you're no stranger to patents. Because because while you're doing your graduate work, you meet a fresh-faced, absolute whiz kid of a Lakefield high school student. And he's gone on to his own patents. Tell me a little bit about how you got involved with Adam Noble.
It's the microscope. My life revolved around that microscope. So he was doing his research at Trent, and Neil Emery really, really helped him, was essential in that process. And Neil's students suggested that Adam use the microscope. And then she did her due diligence, and she found that I was the one who knew how to use the microscope. Since she connected me with Adam, and I started asking questions, right? I started grilling him. And I never heard it because I'm not from here. I didn't know who he was. But I was sure he was a master's student because of the level that he was talking to me into. And then when he said I'm in high school, I was like, don't lie. Okay, this is not cool. That's not how we start this relationship.
You're like, I'm being punked.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, there's no way you're in high school. And then he started explaining a little bit more. I was like, what? I was in disbelief for the first 2 weeks. But with that, once I started asking a little bit more, I realized like I have to help because it's just so interesting. It has nothing to do with what I'm doing with my PhD, master's or whatever. But it's so cool that I have to help. I have to give up some of my time to make sure that this happens. And in that case, back then, he was focusing on the removal of the nanoparticles out of the wastewater. And I started helping with that. And that's where it started.
Well, okay. So this is going to require a bit more science. And thankfully, you're really good at explaining. I do hope that you find some time amidst your medical work and your work with Noble Inc. to do some classroom work, because you do translate things rather well. And I'm going to get you to translate again. First of all, so nanosilvers and what they have to do with human health and with environmental health.
So nanosilver is a compound that's been very, very widely used today. And the reason for that is because it's really good at killing bacteria and funguses. And today in the media, you hear a lot about superbugs that are resistant to antibiotics, that we have to find something else. Nanosilver does that. And there's also a different aspect there. It's an economical aspect that, for example, shipping containers that we get from different countries in Asia or South America or even Europe, when those shipping containers are on the ship, moisture can get in and creates mold. And who wants their product, you as the vendor, receiving the shipment, and there's mold all over your clothes,
exactly,
right? So what they do, they are starting to spray nanosilver on the shipping containers. Or athletic clothing lines that now they promote that they have socks or pants or whatever that will not make your feet smelly or does not allow you to. That's all nanosilver. Febreze has nanosilver in it. Because it's good in killing the bacteria. It's really, really good at that.
Yeah.
But people very often, they make use of it, a lot of use of it, and then they're like, oh, but we don't really know what it does. Like, well, let's see what happens, and then maybe it'll be okay.
That seems to be a pattern in human behavior, really. Let's produce it. And, oh, we'll stop, but once we have a good reason to. And,
exactly.
Okay, so we have the substance, the problematic substance. What's the next logical step here?
Yeah, so the issue with the nanosilver is, as the name suggests, it's very, very small. Mm-hmm. Your hair, like one piece of your hair, yeah. It's much larger than a nanosilver particle. And they're really good at getting into places. So mm-hmm. those clothes that you might have bought that claim that they help you not be smelly, mm-hmm. they have the nanosilver. But actually, after you wash it about three times, all the nanosilver is gone into our wastewater streams.
Great.
And we have been, Adam specifically has found that there is an impact into the environment because of those nanosilvers, because they've been getting it into algae. They're getting into fish, like baby mm-hmm. trouts and things like that, and causing them to have mutations that normally would not be there.
Is that moving up the food chain as well? Is there an elevation generationally by food chain?
So there's, as of right now, yeah. there's not much research on that aspect. Okay. There are researchers at Trent that are not Adam, for example, that mm-hmm. are doing research for that aspect. But that's the belief, because that's how bioaccumulation works, yeah. right? So the little algae gets it, the bigger algae eats it, and then it goes on and on and on. So there's a lot of issues and potential issues that can come from that. And that's why Adam, he grew up around here in Lakefield, and he saw, I want to do something. And he started doing the research.
Which is very cool. And mm-hmm. and you, the two of you brought, A, you know, two scientific minds together, and B, a real passion for making change into this, and formed a partnership, which is blossoming just wonderfully right now.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about what's going on with Noble Inc.
So that's a whole other beast.
Yeah. This is part B. So we've moved away from your research. We're yes. we're now into the other branch of this yes. career.
Which is my second life, per yeah. se. So
it's tough to have a second life at 26.
I know.
Yeah.
So Noble Tech, it's a company. It's a biotechnology company. And our core technology is growing the algae. Mm-hmm. And we provide algae-based solutions for different problems, including wastewater management.
Yeah.
So now we are able to not only remove nanosilver out of the water, but we can remove nutrient pollution such as phosphorus that causes the algae blooming that we hear about every mm-hmm. summer or so. We can remove heavy metals from the water. There are other things that we can do as well. And with the same algae, if you think about it, the way that it works and the way that I like to explain it is that the algae, they are microscopic. Mm-hmm. You cannot see it with the naked eye. You need a microscope.
Yeah.
Because I made sure of that.
There we go. I'm only going to do things that make use of microscopes.
Exactly. But they're microsponges. That's okay. how I like to think of it. So these algae, they like to pick up different things. And that's part of our intellectual properties, making sure that we train them to pick up specific contaminants. So we can train them to be sponges or magnets for phosphorus, or we can train them to be magnets for certain heavy metals. And then we remove those, we recover that algae back from the water. Mm-hmm. Then now you have clean water on one side and a biomass that could be rich in nutrients, which you can reuse.
So do you then harvest what the algae has been trained to remove from the wastewater?
There are two aspects to that. If it is the nutrient recovery, mm-hmm. Yes, you can reuse it. It could spread in farmers' fields, for example.
Okay.
So instead, they could have a biological fertilizer rather than having to buy their
Very
big
cool.
company name fertilizer.
Yeah.
With the heavy metals, it's a lot about to do with management. So instead mm-hmm. of having a huge tailings ponds that they have to worry about, they have a bucket now.
Wow.
So the issues there with contaminating the water beds or having a breach in the water escapes and contaminates other water sources, it's not present anymore because mm-hmm. it's in a bucket.
This is mind-blowing stuff for a lot of people. And the practical applications are immense, because you've got business applications, you've got things like mining, but then you've got municipalities dealing with wastewater. And so in the future, where do you see this going?
Yeah, that's always a good question as well. So right now, as we speak, we are in a business development stage mm-hmm. because we have identified several markets that can benefit from this. And the way that I like to explain it is we are an environmental company,
yeah.
but we are environmental and capitalistic
yeah.
because we will help you, but there's a benefit to you. So you're helping the environment, but you don't even know it, right?
Yes.
So we can have the municipalities that, for example, a lot of them suffer today that they cannot build any more houses. They cannot have any further development because of the phosphorus load into their wastewater. We can help that. We can remove the phosphorus. There's no more algae blooming, which is good for the environment, and the municipalities can build.
So are you removing at the source?
We remove, in the case of the municipality, we remove it at the wastewater treatment plants.
Good.
So it's the centralized one. In the case of mining companies, we remove it at their tailings ponds. And we're also wanting to work with oil and gas companies to remove their needs of a tailings ponds altogether.
So this is taken off very, very well, to the point that it was just announced that you folks are building a brand new $20 million, 50,000 square foot production facility in the new Trent Research and Innovation Park. Tell me a little bit about why you think setting up in the new Research and Innovation Park is important to you, and why it's such a good fit.
Well, it's a natural fit for us because I am a Trent graduate. The research was being done at Trent. Our office is at Trent. We do Trent research at Trent University.
Yeah.
So you couldn't have asked for a better story. And Adam always made sure that when he first heard about the research park, he said, I want to be part of that. And the idea behind the park as well is to be a hub for environmental companies or environmental-driven companies. So we decided that as a company, we wanted to be the showcase. So to kind of set the tone to anyone else coming in to say, hey, our goal is to be an environmental company. Our goal is to have our buildings to be not just pretty looking, but also as environmental as possible and do environmental work out of here and create jobs locally and grow here in Peterborough. And it was great timing from our end because we wanted to grow and the research park announcement came about. So it's been amazing.
I look at this and part of the story is, yes, we now have a cornerstone tenant in a wonderful project. But the sidebar to this story is that both you and Adam are hitting the ground running at ages when people are just wrapping their heads around, oh, what am I going to do with my life? And it's, I mean, does this come up in conversation? At one point, you know, a year or two ago, he's 20, you're 24. Do you say, wow, you know, this is a bit out there?
It's interesting because I feel about that about Adam because he's 22 and I look at him and I'm like, wow, you accomplished so much and you're 22. And then people say the same to me. It's like, wow, you're 26 and you accomplished so much. But I feel that I have so much more work to do. It was a battle to get here.
Yeah.
It will still be a battle and a half to get even further. But always with the idea that you do what you got to do, right? But it's good that we are young because we have a lot of energy.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot of time, right?
Yeah, a ton of time.
Yeah.
Well, and you both have passion. I mean, he's off doing med school. You've got a medical background, and we didn't even talk about the medicinal applications.
Yeah.
So before we go, let's quickly jump into that because you do have a passion for human health as well as environmental
yes.
health. What are some of the potential applications that you're looking at with your technology?
So there are two technologies that we're working right now. The most advanced one, I would say, or the most complex one, per se, is taking a sum of nanoparticles that are specifically designed and use those to treat cancer. So the way that Adam normally explains, just like radiation, some of radiation could cause cancer, but some radiation can actually be used to treat cancer. So the particles that we use are very, very well selected and tested, so they do not cause the same harm effects that the other nanosilvers could cause. But we have been seeing some very interesting results that to the point that I thought someone messed up. It was too good to be true. It's like, no way, we're doing this again.
Yeah.
Like, oh, but it takes time. It's like, we have to do this again. It's too good. So it's interesting because it looks like that we are onto something from Trent that is using these particles to target cancer cells and solid mass tumors. And the results that we got are very promising. So it's very, very nice.
Which would probably dwarf the headlines that you've already made, I would imagine, should this research go the way that you want.
Yeah, it takes time.
Yeah.
And I understand getting involved with it. It takes a lot of time and money, but it should take time because it's, at the end of the day, you're targeting people's health, right? So you want to make sure that you have something that is as safe as you can possibly get, mm-hmm. and that you have as much data as you can possibly get, because you want to make sure that at the end of the day, those people are as safe as they can possibly be.
Well, we're going to be watching, and I know that the rest of the Trent community is going to be watching with great anticipation, because we've seen what you can do, and we can see what you've done in partnership with Adam, and it is truly astounding. So it sounds like you've got an incredibly busy immediate future. But quickly, what's next? What should we be expecting to see from your office in the next 6 months to a year? What should we be watching Andressa for?
Well, Noble Tech, we've been working very hard in expanding our team. So we're actually hiring you right now. Good. So if you have machine maintenance background, just let me know. Yeah. But we are really interested in expanding our plant and also finding new markets for our product. That our goal is to be as sustainable as possible. So if there's a market that could use some sustainability and it could use an algae solution, we want to do that. And hiring those new people will help with that and creating more jobs. I guess that's what you can expect in the short term.
And I think that's something that everyone in this area is delighted to hear. and I've been delighted to have you as a guest, Andressa.
No, thank you. It's great to be here.
unfortunately, we are out of time. Once again, I want to thank Andressa Lacerda for being here. She's a scientist and entrepreneur, and she's a great asset to Trent Peterborough and the Trent and Peterborough community. Once again, I'm Donald Fraser. This has been Trent Voices. For more great features, be sure to follow us online at Trent Alumni on Twitter and the Trent University Alumni Association on Facebook. And you can find a whole ton more of these interviews at trentu.ca/alumni. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.